How's that sound?
Yeah, definitely do that. As loud as you can do that really would be great.
If I need to make mouth noises, should I do it here or here?
Anywhere that's comfortable.
Cryptids, you know they have some serious mouth noises.
All right, David's trying to come in here, so I guess we'll let him in.
All right.
I guess he's worthy.
He's the boss.
Well, I don't prefer that term. Okay. All right. Can you hear everybody? We're trying to figure out our echo situation in here. I can hear football very loudly from, you know, I'm just going to guess.
We hear football. I hear echo of Evan.
We're already rolling here, too. Just we've been talking about you for about 10 minutes. It's mostly just a David roast we figured we would start the episode with. Ottoman came in here. He was jumping in. Really dark stuff.
He had a lot pent up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Test.
Mute, mute. All right. It's good for me. Can you hear me? You need to mute. Oh, I muted. Okay.
That's better. Can you hear me, David? He can't hear me because he muted me. Wait, you can hear me?
He just said, yeah.
Through Evan. Did you hear that great mouth noise? I heard the echo. It's so hard not to.
Oh, here, let's do this.
This is what I was telling you to do the whole time I've been sitting here.
That's great. Well, if like by the end of this, it's going to be you and David having a podcast, and I'm not even part of it.
And I still record at your house. You're our sound guy. Are you recording still the audio?
Yeah.
You should turn it off.
Just save yourself. No, it's good. This is...
You run a wire out to that guy? The Yeti guy?
But he recorded his own audio.
Oh, gosh, he's good.
Yeah.
What a guest.
Glory. He knew this was a big deal. Here we go. Check. Okay.
Oh, it's so much better. No, we're good.
Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David. Do, 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 do. It is time for the Oddity Archive.
Wait, David, wait.
It is time to learn about cryptids and ghosts.
David, wait.
And unsolved mysteries.
I'm not ready. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I had to run in here. Ottoman was being a dumb piece of
You know, the more we talk about Ottoman, the more I'm concerned it might just be your alter ego.
Nah, I got my life together. We're all good here.
Except for tonight, Evan's hearing about 15 different voices.
Yeah, we have a bit of a unique recording session tonight.
And so if 20 minutes from now he's just screaming into the microphone and then runs away, we'll just put those 20 minutes up and call it an episode.
Yeah, and just remember, whatever happens, it's David's fault.
I'll take ownership. I've got a few things to cover here at the top.
Yeah.
We're just rolling into this. I don't know what the opening of this episode is going to sound like because we've been recording for 30 minutes trying to figure out tech issues. So Evan's going to figure that out. But we're rolling in. Season 2, episode 10. This is the season finale.
Oh.
So I've got a few notes to go over and then we'll get into the episode. The first thing I want to share with you, Evan, is that I was chatting with a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Chandler, if you're listening to this.
We were on a break.
What?
Any friends, fans in the... I didn't even watch that show, but anyway, some people will get it.
Okay, fair enough. So I was chatting with her. She was one of the winners of our amazingly branded spigot covers.
Oh, nice.
And I was chatting with her, and she's actually used it at least twice for its intended purpose, a wine bottle holder.
Yeah, of course.
She thought that is the better use for it.
Red wine, white wine, what'd she roll with?
I didn't get into if we're talking Pinot or a Merlot.
Oh.
I don't know wine types. I'm not a wine person.
You got two of them out there. That's good.
Yeah, those are the only two I know. We got reds and we got whites.
And they both good.
So I thought you would appreciate somebody using it for the purpose you prefer.
Yeah.
Early morning wine walks.
Were they on a nature trail or where did they go?
I think that they were in the mountains for like a getaway or something.
Okay.
Mini vacation. Took it with them. Morning wine walk in the mountains looking for Bigfoots.
Okay. Yeah.
So season two, what are your thoughts on this season?
I feel like we figured it out a bit towards the tail end of season one. Like I think 3 or 4 episodes in, I was like, oh, now I know what we're doing. And I feel like season two, we just were able to kind of run with it being a little more polished from the get-go and kind of knowing more, oh, here's the episode and I know what it looks like versus trying to figure it out in the edit, like, what are we actually doing here? So I cry a lot less.
What does David want from me?
The what? Sorry, I'm about to figure out this. So much echo.
Right now, Evan's headphones are like on his temples awkwardly.
I just keep moving them around to be like, where can I have the least? Here we go. Does this work?
Do you need headphones on?
Shh. No one knows your hair yet. Sorry, that's
the landlord.
Yeah, she heard about the hose covers. Like, well, I gotta get in there.
They're not on. You're sticking.
Well, here's the thing.
They're holding wine bottles.
Our pinos are looking good.
Season two. Overall, happy with season two?
Yeah, I think it was good. We threw some new stuff in there. We had the cryptid game, and I feel like a couple other little things we tried out. But yeah, it was fun.
I think I said season one was like a proof of concept. Like, can we make a podcast that any human beings will listen to? And I think that was a success. I think we beat my expectations with that season by quite a bit. And season two, I was thinking about, this season has really kind of felt like a stress test to me, like of our systems.
Yeah.
Because with season one, we had, I think, 4 episodes recorded and ready before we even dropped the first one.
Yeah.
And so we had a lot more time in between being able to do things. This season, it's like every 2 weeks we're trying to hit record on something while working full-time jobs, traveling, having a family, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's been, I don't mean stressful in like I'm just panicking every day of my life, but just stress tests in how well can our systems keep up with getting episodes out consistently.
Yeah.
But I think it's been a fun season and we've tried some new stuff. We did the cryptid quiz. Mm-hmm. I have a note about that one specifically that I'll throw in here in a minute.
Is it that I nailed it?
Yeah, that you nailed it.
Your long pause is all I need.
Well, actually, you made me think of 2 notes for that episode. One, I'm still waiting on the grape nuts consumption.
I thought you were going to buy me the grape nuts.
I said explicitly in that episode, I'm not buying you the grape nuts.
I got a picture at like 9 a.m. this morning of just a box of grape nuts at the store, which was basically just like, you better go buy that, dude.
I was at Food Lion before 8 a.m. this morning.
That's too early.
Then we had Trainer, our first-hand encounter.
Yep.
Foreshadowing. We might have our second guest with experiences on tonight.
Already broke the fourth wall. So.
And then, and then we had Black Eyed Kids episode, which was kind of in the same vein as John Teeter,
yep,
where it was like, we just go into it acknowledging that this probably isn't a real thing, but it's just some fun stories to tell.
And I would say this season, we also did a lot more music.
Yeah, we started the music tracks at the end of episodes.
Which has been super fun.
Which the ones that you do by yourself are leaps and bounds better than anything I've been featured on. Because
dude, your MF Doom one was great. What are you talking about?
But what I learned about the episodes specifically is that I actually really enjoy doing the boring episodes. Mm-hmm. Like the Mary Celeste, the Lost Colony, the ones that are like really research history heavy. I actually enjoy those episodes more than like the fun joking around, not a lot of research episodes. There's just something about digging into the history of a story, coming up with a narrative approach. I just wish I had more time to do those kinds of episodes.
So you just don't like my tomfoolery? No, I get it. I mean, I imagine that's why I got into this, was you are very interested in a subject and want to go in and break it down. And I'm sure it takes a ton of time to research and deep dive all that stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of counterintuitive because you would think the more fun episodes that I don't have to put as much effort into would be the ones I enjoy more. But I actually enjoy the ones that I put the most effort into.
No, I get that. Yeah.
And so without further ado, she already broke the fourth wall, but I want to introduce our guest for tonight. She is a Honey Smacks enthusiast.
Boo.
She is Evan's overbearing landlord and also happens to be his sister. Welcome to the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So we jumped on a call last week because you had expressed an interest, I feel like a while back, about coming onto the podcast and just talking about some personal experiences that you've had. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, give us some context.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Sarah. I'm Evan's sister and landlord. And you can imagine that works out pretty well for us. He gets a great rate and he doesn't put his picket protectors on. But when y'all started doing this show... Evan, sorry, I have a terrible echo.
I haven't changed anything.
We're dealing with tech issues tonight.
I was good. Should we share a mic?
I guess we could do that.
Gross.
Ew, yeah, that's terrible.
I forgot to add my note about the cryptid quiz. I looked up Barton's Gin, and it's owned by the Sazerac Company. So I emailed them and asked them if they would be the official gin of the Oddity Archive. I have not heard back.
That's a great idea. It's amazing what you can get when you just ask.
Wait, they said they didn't come back to him.
Hmm? Yeah, not yet.
They didn't respond.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying. It's amazing what you can get if you just ask. Like, it's good to ask. No matter what happens.
I was like, whoa. Jesus. Out of man!
Why is the microphone up in the air?
Because I'm trying to... it started falling off the desk.
Oh. That's sweet. Okay. I'm trying to give us a little space so we don't have to, like, be up in the... like. We can
I
be...
talk into the side of it, or does that have to be through that black thing?
The microphone?
No, this part. Dipsh. God damn it. This part, do I have to talk through that, or this can I talk like this? Can I talk like this?
It's better if you're... so we should both kind of be here aimed in, but you can scoot back.
All right.
Give your cider.
I hardly know her.
Here, I'll give you the...
What are we sipping on tonight?
We're sipping on a little Potter's Craft Cider, Imperial Dry.
I've been recording.
It's really good. Morning.
Okay, David, you can hear us.
Potter's.
Yeah, check, check.
Yes.
Sarah,
any echoes?
No echoes.
Nope. We feel good. Lesson learned.
Sorry.
You know, go lo-fi.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Now, goodness. Now, when we both laugh, you'll get like a good stereo dolphin kind of vibe. Okay. All right, I think we're good here. David, you good?
We jump back in. All right. So welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We just resolved some tech issues. So Evan and Sarah are very close to each other right now in this video call.
And I don't like to point fingers, but David was mostly on your side.
Yeah, the tech issues were
mostly David Bourne.
Shockingly, I have very few tech issues with my extremely convoluted setup to record these episodes.
I just send you links every month, like, hey, buy this thing. And you're like, okay, I guess I'll just figure it out. And then I'm over here like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to record. I don't know where the red light is.
I'm on a Google Meet with Evan and Sarah listening to that audio through a set of AirPods while recording on a 12-year-old Chromebook on onlinevoicerecorder.com. I'm not making that up. And then I send Evan the audio from that. So the recording setup I have doesn't make any sense.
Then there's our side where I'm like, yeah, 8 sounds good. And then we start recording at 9:30 because I'm like running wires around my room and everything else. But anyway, we figured it out. Now we're ready.
So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. You know, as a mom of a baby, recording at night makes me feel a little terrified because, like, what's going to happen in a couple hours?
So you'll be awake approximately every 3 to 4 hours throughout the night.
Yeah, best case scenario, 3 to 4 hours. That's what we're hoping for.
All right. Well, we talked last week on a call, but I feel like you had expressed an interest pretty early on about coming onto the podcast and just sort of talking about some personal experiences that you've had. And so I guess let's just intro it with, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you want us to know. What got you interested in maybe coming on the podcast, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, sure. So my reason for wanting to come on is that I feel that there's a lot of people who have paranormal experiences and don't share them or don't want to process them. I was reading a book recently called Mort by Terry Pratchett. He's got a whole series of them, but essentially this guy Death, he walks around and he's a skeleton with glowing red eyes, and he just like walks around society and everyone engages with him like a person. Even though he looks terrifying, it's that people's brains kind of shut off to what they're actually seeing. And I feel as though society kind of trains us to do that because it's not a comfortable thing to talk about. So I hope to relieve some of the stigma. You know, I'm an average person aside from just being related to Evan. And
does that make you below or above?
That makes me below average.
Adjacent.
Great. Got it. No, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I get it.
But, you know, I had experiences my entire life up to recently. I think a lot of people have things in their lives that they can't explain. And it's interesting once I decided to come on the podcast because it's vulnerable to talk about some of the stuff. And
absolutely.
Some of the stuff isn't super easy to hear. Like, we won't talk through everything, but, you know, people have their judgments about folks that have experiences like this. But a lot of people have things that they can't explain and they just sort of shut their brain off to them. And so I was reading that book and feeling a little inspired that humans need to dig into everywhere that feels uncomfortable so that we can keep growing. And I think that talking about some of this stuff and how some folks seem to be wired or in tune to whatever causes it, and that the folks that feel this way, they're not alone. Because I was just talking to Jess recently, and Evan, I guess they all know that she's your partner.
She's been mentioned enough.
Like, now that she's singing on the Black Eyed Peas equivalent yeah. soundtrack. But she at first had said, no, I haven't had any experiences. And then once our conversation went on a bit more, she's like, oh, actually, I have had an experience yeah. or two. Yeah. So I think that's how a lot of folks are. We kind of want to stick to the reality that we know, but there's so much more outside of what we see that's worth interacting with.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you've found a pocket of people where you can have these conversations now? Or is it just something you feel like you have to kind of roll with on your own and process? How hard is it to find like a community within these experiences and how to share them with people?
It's incredibly difficult to find people to share this with, I would say, outside of your family. Luckily, you've witnessed what we'll call the Great Metronome Incident of 1999.
I remember it. Well, I'm sure we'll address it.
Yeah. My mom had a lot of experiences with paranormal sightings, especially as a child. And mine were definitely more prevalent as a child. And we can speak a little bit to that. As I've gotten older and more comfortable, I think something as you get older is you just become so much more comfortable with who you are and the experiences that you have and what your truth is. And that has allowed me to seek out people that not only have had similar experiences, but are more receptive to these energies or to what they call like seeing through the veil is the term that they use in that community. Because I was honestly sort of seeking a mentor because some of the stuff was making me so uncomfortable because I felt not talented or capable to deal with it emotionally myself or to be helpful in the way that I felt like these energies or spirits or whatever they may be, what they were hoping for me to be able to help with.
Okay. I really appreciate you being willing to come on here and be vulnerable and share some of your stories. I do want to sort of take a step back and just sort of get an idea, like, what realm are we talking about? Are you like going in the woods and communing with the Jersey Devil? Are you like talking about getting abducted by aliens?
Yeah.
What lane are we in as far as paranormal stuff goes?
So there's a variety of ways that paranormal things have come into my life, mostly just at the start as a child, a lot of visions where I could actually see spirits walking around my house. I feel like there are energies within either objects or spaces, or they pass through people. And our house that we grew up in definitely had a lot of spiritual activity or energetic activity, which I kind of view as the same thing. Like we're all just hear energy bouncing all around and hitting each other. And occasionally we kind of cross paths, but there's something about our childhood home. So, you know, we had things fly across rooms, okay. electrical surges and things like that. So there's some like physical realm. There's been people revealing themselves to me through like deep sleep dreams. And then just engagement in like the psychic community, just some work through there where I've experienced paranormal things.
I mean, and I think what's interesting here to me, at least for me to be like, I'm full-blooded Mulder. And Sarah is talking about this stuff. Like we grew up in the same house and had very different experiences, but also like we did have some overlap in stuff we experienced. And maybe I just reasoned it away to a fault maybe even. Because yeah. I do remember one especially, and I was just like,
why don't we start, well, at the beginning, how old were you when you like realized I'm experiencing things that other people aren't experiencing?
I never felt that it was weird or different, but I could see people walking around our house who were, you know, not from our house. And they did appear hazy. They were like shadowy figures that they would kind of peer around my door and kind of look in. And it was never a frightening experience. And I think that was something that's where it piqued something in my child brain to say, I'm seeing somebody, but this isn't creating a sensation of fear.
Okay.
It felt like a curiosity. And I would tell my mom, oh, I just saw this person. I would describe the person and she would freak out and like look all over the house.
Mom's like,
I mean, yeah.
How old are we talking when you first started noticing these things? Or has it just been your whole life?
Yeah, as early as I can remember, especially in that house, I would always see a woman walk past the corner of my eye, past our windows. My mom had rented out the house and people had also seen a woman walking around. And it's interesting.
Renters said this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm telling you, man.
Was this like, how, did they just tell mom like, hey, I think somebody's outside? What was the communication?
Mom had told them that Sarah used to see, and mom used to see some things too. And the tenants were like, it's crazy you say that because I saw a woman come down the stairs. Hmm. So there's something about the stairs in the house. I don't know if something happened a long time ago or I think we were actually, were we the first owners of that house?
I think it was a new build that they bought.
Yeah. So the rumor in our neighborhood is that, or at least in our household, is that something has happened on those grounds that has caused there to be a lot of spiritual energy. But I remember even up to when I was 16, 17, 18 years old, the noise of someone walking down our stairs, wearing boots, like hearing almost like chains dragging down our steps really, really loud, enough that I would freak out and run out of our house. And I would drive to a friend's house. And you know, you're 16, you always want to look somewhat attractive and put together. I would fly out of our house straight from bed and just go to the nearest friend's house because I was so sure someone was in our house. And we would go back and, you know, nothing was there. Nothing had fallen down the steps because my room was next to the attic stairs. And so I could just hear someone walking down. And every once in a while, we'd hear this ka-chunk sound. Like, you'd hear footsteps and you'd hear the ka-chunk. And we had a gallows road near us. And we were always wondering if there were gallows originally on the ground somewhere. And we were curious if that had been the case.
What did you say? What gallows?
That's where people get hung.
And it sounded like that. Like, it sounded like someone walking with chains up or down our stairs, followed by the loud slamming noise. And to this day, you know, we lived in that house for 20 years at least, and we never could ascertain what could possibly be making that sound. It's just not a big house.
Also, just like, why is there a gallows drive in our neighborhood? You're just right. Like, that's already right. Like a weirdly coded thing.
So at some point, it did take a turn into inducing fear in you.
Yes, as I got older.
As you got older, maybe you were just able to pick up on more of what was going on?
Yeah, I think as the world sort of creeps into your reality and the news and all of that, you understand that things aren't always safe. I've always seen someone walk out of the corner of my view in that house, but like outside the house, they would always walk by, like coming up to the front door, and you would go and answer the door and no one would be there sort of thing. Mm-hmm. That never went away, but what did go away was seeing people physically, and that noise always carried on. But yeah, I grew more scared of it as I got older. And I think one thing to point out too is we had a couple stereos in the house, two different stereos that would just all of a sudden come on full blast and the power switch wouldn't be on. And the last time you were listening to it, you didn't have it on full blast. So yeah. There's just a lot of electrical things.
I'm trying to remember, David, if it was you and me or me and another friend in the neighborhood, but Sarah had this like 6 CD changer and we're like downstairs and all of a sudden like some kind of song cranks on upstairs and we're just like, it's just you and me there watching Conan O'Brien or whatever at the time.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
So we did like SWAT style cleared the house, but like there's always been stuff like that at that home where.
Yeah, like lights flipping on and off. Like, yeah.
So I want to go back to the I guess shadow people maybe would be the best way.
Mm-hmm.
So you would see them out of the corner of your eye and, you know, hear the noises and everything. Were they trying to interact with you? Were they just, there's one version of like ghost sightings that people call the stone tape theory, which is like a spirit is, it's not really there. It's just an energy that is going through the motions that person did while they were alive. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see someone walking down the hall and they'll do that same thing. It's not really the spirit. It's just the energy of that person because they had done that so many times and you're seeing that energy repeat itself. And so I'm wondering if it was more that stuff or more like these were intelligent beings that were interacting in some sort of way with you.
For the ones in my early childhood, they were interacting with me in a curious way.
Like, oh my God, she can see us?
Yeah, they're kind of like playfully looking in and seeing if they're just, I don't know, peering in and they scoot away and mom would come up. It's hard to describe, but
sup?
It was very like, it was very playful and yeah, kind of like, oh my gosh, she can see me.
So you didn't feel threatened with it?
Not at all.
I'm sure it was like a lot to process.
I was so young, I think 5 or 6, where it didn't occur to me to be scared. I would let mom know.
I was like, oh, this is just like
the thing. Yeah, I was like, mom, I see a person. A person just peered around the corner. She's like, oh, okay, honey, go back to sleep. And then, like you said, she'd go around with a butter knife. But the reason I think that there's something there with interaction beyond the theory you describe where it's the same energy all the time is that I was describing the story 2 years ago at Thanksgiving where, you know, my dad, he doesn't believe in any of this kind of stuff. And I was explaining how haunted our childhood home was. He's like, oh, no. And I'm like, don't you remember that the speakers would come on and just full blast, just be so loud? And as I was telling the story, the speakers of his house came on full blast.
Oh, okay.
And then fast forward another year later. So there is a spirit that lives in my dad's house and she's a woman that lived there at some point and she feels very territorial. I think she lived there for a long time and she's fine. She's not going to hurt anybody or she doesn't want to scare anybody, but she's like, this is my kitchen. Damn it. Like, get out of here. And I was telling my sister, there's someone here who doesn't want me to be cooking here. And I like just backed up a little bit and then the spatula flipped out of the pan. Or it wasn't even a pan, it was a pot. It wasn't like, oh, I set it down wrong. I sensed the energy of someone feeling very territorial of this kitchen. She flipped the ladle out of the soup and it laid on the ground. And I said, I know this is your kitchen. This is your kitchen. I'm just here to cook. This is not mine. And I just went back to cooking. So I kind of talked to her through that.
Once that happens, is there a way to approach that energy? How do you process and then react?
I don't want to belittle the people that are communicating this way. I'm just using a metaphor, so please don't take it this way. Do you know how sometimes like a dog might come up to you from the forest and you're like, is this dog going to be nice or not? And you're like, hey, like everything's fine. It's kind of like that. And you don't know how they're really interpreting it, but you're doing your part to show that you acknowledge them. I think most of what they want is acknowledgement. And that's some of the stories, I think, especially for the people that have me dream about them. Mm-hmm. I think it's that people just want to, just like people who are alive right now in this reality that we know, just want to feel heard and loved and respected.
Yeah.
And so I try to do that.
Is it more like the instance in the kitchen? Is it enough for you to like verbally say, I recognize this is your space, I'm here, et cetera, or is it more like you were saying with the dog where you're just projecting a positive energy out, like you're intentionally putting a positive energy out and it's not so much like a verbal communication?
So I chose to communicate verbally with her and I felt that she didn't change the way she was making me feel. I think that's the best way I can describe it is like they make you feel what they're feeling. As I was cooking, I became kind of overwhelmed with a, this is wrong. I need to get out. Like, this is not your house.
Okay.
And it was kind of like, which is not how I was feeling at all.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, I've just sort of learned this isn't me. This is something else. And that's why, like, I backed up from the stove. The spoon flipped out. And I told her, like, this is your kitchen. Like, I know this must be hard for you. You lived here a long time. I just am cooking for my family. And this is your kitchen.
Okay.
But at this last Christmas, the story came up because my sister's always been freaked out about that because she saw the spoon flip out and she's always kind of been uncomfortable with this stuff. And I was going to tell that story to a couple of people who were new that Christmas that they hadn't heard it before. And as I was telling it, I don't know if you remember me saying like, she doesn't want me to tell the story.
Yeah.
And then I did anyway, because I'm a schmuck. Paused and I said, I know you don't want me to tell the story. I just did. And as I was telling the story, or maybe shortly after, the speakers came on full it blast from during, the TV during the story. Yeah.
And you witnessed this, Evan.
Yeah. And we were all there and we were like, where is this like sound coming from? We all like look up and then me and my dad go in the living room. And
it
like,
said Jess, if you remember.
That part I didn't hear.
Oh, I totally
also, heard. I definitely heard something and...
A Scully over here.
heard something, not the music.
So it's one of those systems where the TV can be off and the audio system can be on, but still feeding the audio from cable or whatever.
Okay.
So me and my dad go in there. The TV is off. There's definitely audio from some show, movie, whatever. And I don't know how it turned on, but it did happen.
We were trying to figure it out. So I'm not saying the truth is out there, Mulder and Scully. I'm saying the truth is right here. And like, we just need to not shut our brain off to it.
I, especially with doing this, want to be more open to that side of things. Be like, well, what's the other side of things that's not just a faulty power switch?
Uh-huh.
What's the higher level thing that this could be, or more cosmic thing that this could be?
Okay. I do want to go back to one set of stories that you were talking about.
Sarah didn't like that answer.
I'm just like, we're two for two. I'm telling the story. The speakers blast on. I say, she doesn't want me to tell the story. And then she interrupts it by turning on the speaker. It's like, what more evidence do you need? But go on, David. Go on. You host the show. Don't let Evan interrupt your flow.
You'll get used to it because at the end of every episode, Evan will just do this wild combo theory that disproves everything. But I want to go back to something you were saying. And this is, if I was listening to a podcast of someone telling this story, I would want the host to ask this just sort of as a rule out.
Sure.
And so I want to go back to when you were talking about hearing like footsteps on the attic stairs and the chains and the loud bang and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if you've ever heard of a condition called exploding head syndrome.
No.
Because I'm
unless it's the obvious. Like
No, it sounds insanely wild, but it's something that I have. And so that's why I've looked it up and like I know about it. And nobody knows why this happens. But usually when I'm like super, super tired, when I'm falling asleep, I'll be right on the edge of falling asleep. Like I call it, I'm in the twilight zone where I'm like half asleep, half awake. And then for some reason, I'll hear like a loud bang, or even with my eyes closed, I'll see like a really bright flash of light or something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it wakes me up and I'm like, what was that? And then like my dog is dead asleep next to me. Like if there was a loud bang, she would be up barking her head off. And so the first, you know, number of times it happened, it was like, what is going on? But then I looked it up and I realized it's this thing called exploding head syndrome. And so I say all of that just to ask, were you hearing these noises like as you were falling asleep, or were you just like hanging out in your room hearing this stuff?
The ones I remember the most vividly were loud enough to wake me up in the morning where I would need to run out of my house.
Okay.
So it wasn't around falling asleep, but I would just counter that when you are falling asleep, that's sort of a magical time where I think we are able to slip through the veil between this reality and other realities. Like there's a reason why when people meditate and they go into this very clear state that you're able to receive wisdom or have visions or those sorts of things. So just because something can be explained through science doesn't necessarily take away the magic of it. You know, science is the explanation of magic. And by magic, I mean universe, I mean God, I mean whatever it is that animates us that makes this whole world happen. I was a chemistry major because I wanted to understand what the hell is going on here and how are all these things sticking together. So I understand the need for scientific explanations because logic just makes it so warm and fuzzy. And I have some thoughts, you know, with like the pineal gland and calcite crystals that they have these piezoelectric tendencies, like almost like a radio. And they're not as developed as a quartz crystal, for example, that we use in radios. So like these clear signals, but they do have those same properties, and the properties can be more or less depending on the formation of the crystal.
You've already melted my brain. You distill it down and explain like I'm five kind of?
Yeah. What you mean? So piezoelectric properties, and I might not be saying that right, but remember I learned it from reading, so you can't make fun of me if I didn't mispronounce it.
I mean, I didn't even know where it starts with funny.
So like the way radios work, and I'm probably so wrong, so someone can put in the comments how wrong I am, but things that have piezoelectric properties, like crystals, are when they receive certain like electromagnetic energy or waves that they vibrate, and those vibrations are like what allow radios to work. And so our pineal gland is where our third eye is, and these calcite crystals are there. They're small, and they're irregularly formed. As you get older, you get, I think, like calcium phosphate crystals, and those like kind of cloud things up. But everyone has these crystals, and these crystals have the same sort of properties as radios. So my theory is like some people are born with maybe slightly different shaped, or maybe they're developed in certain ways, or maybe, you know, with people with lineages where they're able to be psychics, okay. For example, like maybe they have more developed.
So they may naturally pick up these wavelengths exactly. Coming through just based on how they were born or.
Yeah. And that's kind of how I feel. I feel like a bit like an antenna that sometimes these waves move through that I'm able to, through practice, interpret.
Okay.
I think if the stuff in the kitchen, like at dad's house with the woman, I think if I hadn't been spending 40 years trying to be a little bit open to this sort of thing, that I would have been able to really articulate the feeling and all of that. But I think it's something to do with that in my mind when I try and make it scientific, that maybe it's not a spirit, maybe it's not a being per se, but it's energy waves that we're picking up on. So that's where I wouldn't take it to exploding head syndrome necessarily, but I don't say that just because science can explain it, that it makes it any less magical.
So science actually does not explain exploding head syndrome at all, other than to say like, this is some sort of phenomenon that we don't understand that a lot of people experience.
Yeah, I think I would dig into that and I would try and stay in that space between sleep and awake. And there's
I'm trying to fall asleep. Leave me alone.
Yeah, you're a parent. I forgot.
I'm trying to sleep. But to one of the points that you made, like with meditation does emulate some of the brainwave patterns that you get while you're asleep. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the veil is thinner when you're meditating, similar to when you're falling asleep or when you're asleep, right? Mm-hmm. And that sort of leads into another sort of area that you talked about maybe wanting to discuss, and that's stuff that has happened to you in your dreams.
Yes. This is going to be tricky to talk about because I get so worried about, you know, essentially Evan's speakers turning on full blast because I love to surprise you.
If you can make something happen while this podcast is being recorded, I fully support it.
This is our season finale, so this is perfect for
any bells and whistles I can bring.
But even if she says this, I'm like, I'm already feeling like the energy rise in the room in my body. I'm like,
I know.
The lights are going to turn on.
I'm calling it right now. If you can get the speakers to come on full blast playing Stained, then this will be the greatest podcast episode
of all
time.
They choose what they do. I don't know. We'll see what they
pick. They're huge Stained fans in the other world, from what I've seen.
We only bring this up
because in the last episode, there's a lot of...
It's been a while
since I had a vision at night. Something like that.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
Wait, so y'all did say something. Both of you like co-signed it. You can feel the energy rising in the room where you're at right now.
Yeah, but I'm also wearing a hoodie. So it's getting hot.
Mold or Scully.
Scullies
yeah,
are
Scully.
So annoying.
Sarah's like, oh, God.
Now, do you think...
But so there is a shared... Sorry, I'm waving my pen right in her eyes. Because, you know, I thought she was cool with that.
So let's talk about the dream stuff. And then maybe we can move into like some specific events. We've already teased the metronome incident.
Of 1999.
I need to know the story of the like creepy doll picture that you sent.
Oh gosh, I forgot about
and
that.
And so we'll go over some specific events and I'm going to pick your brain about those.
Sure.
I'm curious to know a little bit more about like the dream stuff because you've had some odd encounters during dreams.
Yes, I have. So where to begin? Like I mentioned, everybody just wants to be validated and seen and understood. And since I was little, until I asked them to stop, I would have dreams of people who I would be the person, not myself. And it was their death. And I would live their death because something happened in their death that was very unfair or unwitnessed. And they wanted someone to know is the way that it feels. It could also be that thing where it's a highly energetic experience when people die. It's an energy transfer to something we don't understand. And maybe I'm just, it's passing through. But because of the recurring theme, or maybe like past lives or something even, I don't know, where I believe, you know, in reincarnation and maybe it's something there, but it didn't feel like me. It was entirely someone different who had an injustice. Sorry, it's hard to even think about some of these stories.
So is the perspective like you're...
I'm entirely that person.
You're their POV, like you're looking out their eyes.
It's not that I'm even their POV. I'm entirely that person. Sarah is completely gone.
So can you run us through, like, what would one experience be like? Like, you're in a bed, you're sick, you're passing?
That would be a great one.
I'm imagining it's more traumatic. Events.
Yes, they're ones that are awful. And that's why I hesitate to talk about them. If you want me to go into detail on one, I think there's one.
So I have a few clarifying questions. And then if you want to give an example, you can.
Sure.
My first question is, are all of these events modern times? Or some of them like, I was a soldier in the Civil War and I got shot?
Unless I am misinterpreting any sort of events, the oldest one is from the Holocaust.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And did you ever, I'm just imagining if something happened like that to me over and over, part of me would try and figure out who these people were. So like, did you ever pick up on names? Did you ever do historical research, try and like see if these people existed?
There was one that was more recent that I was telling a friend in college about, and we looked it up and we did find the person, and she happened to have my same last name.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. This stuff's crazy. I'll share a little bit about that one. I won't share maybe how it happened. I think I had the premonition around maybe 17 or 18. Went to college, was talking about this with my roommate, because I'd always get really strong deja vu experiences. I could have experiences where I would say, this is going to happen. And I would tell my roommate that, and we would kind of wait to see what happened. And it'd be mundane stuff, like getting a package from somebody or whatever it might be. But with this one, I went into more details, and she asked, like, well, do you want to look it up? Have you ever tried? And I said we could. And it was something that had happened in the past, but when I had had the premonition, it was prior to the event, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It was a couple, and the couple were eloping. And they're giggling and like super in love and snuggling. And there's just like this woman with this really big, beautiful red hair and her partner just giddy that they were getting away with something and something kind of they shouldn't be doing. And I didn't know what it was at the time. I just knew that this feeling of like, oh my gosh, we're like sneaking away and this is so crazy. And then, you know, something terrible happens and they both die. And when I found the story online later, they had been eloping. And so that was that feeling of like, oh my gosh, we're doing this. You know, it was like this excitement as a couple. Mm-hmm. And like their death sucked so bad. And so I could see why you'd just want someone to like, hey, this happened to me. And like, no one knows. And I just want someone else to be like, man, that sucks. I'm so sorry. And that's what I felt like I was providing.
The end goal, you think, from these experiences is we just want somebody to hear what we went through or our experience or like how we...
We want our story told.
Yeah, like what are you the conduit for?
I think it's for the validation of the experience. It's either that or it's just happening in somewhere in space and time. And I happen to be there as someone who can maybe pick up on these things. Mm-hmm. It does feel a little personal since it happened a few times. I would say with the deaths, it's probably only been about 5 times in my life. So it's not a ton, but they happened in succession. The last one that happened was so challenging to experience that like I woke up and the best way I can describe it, this is going to sound nuts and I understand that, is that I was making eye contact with the person through the veil. It made their experience available to me. And then I woke up and they were like there. And it freaked me out so bad. I just said, I'm so sorry. I know that this people need this, but I can't be me. Cause I feel like I was losing my mind. Mm-hmm. And some of it was so awful.
So this was a dream or a dream.
Yeah.
State.
And then I came,
woke up there still in the room.
Yeah. After and I felt like I had made eye contact with them.
Intense.
It was super intense. I was 21. And I, you know, it's old enough to like not be a child who's imagining things. Like I had the really vivid experience and then they were like right there and I made eye contact with them, but their body wasn't there, but it was just like their presence was there so strongly that I said, I just don't feel like I'm equipped enough to handle this. My mental health will suffer. I understand that you need someone to do this, but it can't be me. And it never happened again after that. And those 5 happened in like relatively close succession over the years. Mm-hmm. Like once I became old enough to be able to understand what was happening.
All right, that was 21 or whatever you said. So you're older now. Do you think you would say the same thing now? Or would you say like,
so I've been tempted to say like, do y'all need anything?
Yeah.
And well, now I have people that I can contact for support who are much more, I don't want to say talented, but like
guide you
practiced.
To
yeah.
Help you. No,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I have a couple people that can help. Okay. But I could share one story that I feel like this person would be okay with me sharing it.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, if you want to.
Okay.
I think that's more your call than ours.
Well, yeah, it's kind of it's dark and like sad. And I know y'all's podcast is super happy. And I feel as though there's been no talk of cereal.
Y'all love everybody went down. So what do you feel driven to do, I think?
No, I'm happy to share this one. Yeah. I did a lot of thinking about what's appropriate to share. Because after the woman turned on the speakers at Dad's house at Christmas, I was like, I'm going to take it more seriously when they tell me not to share.
Yeah.
But so this one was from the Holocaust. And I had this experience when I was probably 12. And I think it was my first one. And essentially, these people were at a concentration camp and there was a plan.
So where are you?
So I'm probably like a 40-year-old man.
I mean, like you're
I'm asleep.
Like,
yes.
Where are you?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm asleep in bed in our home. I'm like a 12 or 13-year-old young lady and I'm dreaming that I'm a 40-year-old man in the concentration camp and we're being forced to march. Mm-hmm. And me and a few of the other men had this plan to overtake a couple guards. This was new into our incarceration. And so we weren't like very frail, but we were struggling and uncared for. And I don't know the context of like how all had led up to this because it's different from a dream because it's very sequential. It's very clear. And it's very like in this world, there's no shifting or anything. Like sometimes dreams can be very kind of all over the place. Yeah. This is focused and it's a scene for sure. And I am not a 12 or 13-year-old girl, I am a grown man. And so we had all had this plan, like this guard is always harassing us. And it's one guy, like if we all just jump this guy, we'll get a gun, we could do something, or we could at least kill this guy. So we're all walking in this line. This is freaking me out. But sorry, I just remembered something. But we were walking in line, and we had the moment where we had all agreed to rush the guy. And I make the call, we all rush and no one rushes with me. And I turn like, what? Like, where's everybody? And then I'm shot. And then that's my death.
Okay.
Is that where you wake up or?
I don't know if I wake up like from a nightmare. I can't recall that, but that was the complete dream. Mm-hmm. And then the next year I went to Germany with a school trip and we went to Auschwitz. And I was like, this is sure as shit. The freaking fence line.
Yeah. So my question on that story, and again, another rule out, like with exploding head syndrome, I'm thinking while you're telling this story, like at 12, 13 years old, you would have no idea.
Yes.
Like you wouldn't immediately be like, I am a prisoner in the Holocaust, right?
I learned that after the fact. Yeah.
And so then my thought was, I feel like it's too early for that. You wouldn't have been reading like Anne Frank's diary that early, right?
For sure. I had no reference for this. This is stuff that as a grown-up I have reflected back on. And then I went to Auschwitz later. And I might not have even been 12 or 13. I might have been a bit younger when I had the original dream. But I know it was before visiting that, because that's where I was like, oh, that's what that was. And I think it was like...
Are you like on the tour and...
Yeah. And I'm like, I have walked down this...
Lines connect. You're like, yeah. Oh, like I've seen this.
Yeah. Okay. And I did, you know, right. I had not learned about the Holocaust. I didn't understand the dream whatsoever when I had it. I just had it.
Yeah.
But then I think 6 months or so down the road, I think it was like eighth grade where we went on this massive field trip that for some reason our parents let me go on, where I was like, this is what I had dreamed a while back. And then I had understood the significance.
Okay.
Yeah. Did you... do anything with that knowledge once it connected, or was it just like,
no,
oh, this is that, and it's, I mean, you were still pretty young at the time.
Yeah.
What did you even do with it?
I think I told my eighth grade teacher that I had dreamed this before, and she's like, it was probably in a past life, and that was my first introduction into woo-woo. Thank you, Miss Hazem.
It sounds like your experiencing these energies has sort of shifted throughout your life, mm-hmm. from like seeing shadows, like non-fearful, to having those loud noises and sounds and running out of the house, you know, having these dreams to your early 20s when you kind of ask them to stop. And so I'm curious, like, where does it stand now? Because it sounds like you have some degree of controlling it. Do you still see people? Do you still have premonition dreams? Maybe not as intense.
Yeah, it's like some of the ones that I'm not sharing that are so awful. They're so sad. And it's hard to think about some without the others. I know this sounds crazy, but I'd forgotten the Holocaust one.
If Holocaust is the baseline, like,
yeah.
Good God.
No, it's worse than you can imagine.
Is there an apprehension to share stuff just based on the...
It's like respect.
Yeah, I imagine it's hard to be like, oh, I experienced this thing from a very well-known, documented, horrible event.
Mm-hmm.
How do I even bring this to people?
Like with this person who passed in the Holocaust, he was a really brave person who wanted to try, and everyone else was scared, and it's all understandable and we can get it. And it's like, I'm telling you this with reverence about this person who gave it his best shot when it was impossible. Sometimes I worry about... Like, what's that thing where you pass a car crash and you, like, look at it too long?
Rubbernecking?
Yeah, like, I don't want to rubberneck these people's deaths because they deserve much better. And honestly, they don't like it when you do that. And so some of them, which they're so gnarly that I feel like that would just be what it is and it wouldn't be super great to listen to anyway.
So when you drop into these stories, it seems like you're able to at least, like, embody them to some degree. How much backstory comes with that? Or is it, I'm experiencing this moment? And that's kind of it? So you just have this like clip in time. It's a snapshot.
No build up, no context.
When you have these dreams, is it a lucid dream? Are you aware that you are in someone else's body? You know what I mean?
No, I'm absolutely 100% that person.
Okay.
It's impossible really to describe how clean cut it is that it is. That's why I was able to now like put these in a different box versus just some crazy dream.
So you have their thoughts, their feelings, their emotions, everything. You're not just a passenger in their body. You are them.
I am 100% that person. I feel their injustice. I feel their sadness. I feel their confusion profoundly. And then it's gone. And just like a dream, it kind of like it goes somewhere and it takes some digging out to find. And I think I bury them some because some of them are... like so sad. But yeah, like, I just remembered that one when I was signed up to do this podcast. Like, oh yeah, I forgot about that one, which he'd probably be cool with me sharing. So that's great. But
how do you know if they're cool with sharing? Just
I think it's just the tone that I feel about it when I am
talking about
when
it.
I'm talking about it. Yeah. Like I knew like the
it
moment.
Feels okay. Or
yeah.
Like don't go there.
Yeah. I think so. And we all kind of know that too, just in our daily life. Like if you were saying something about your landlord on your podcast, like you would know. If it was approved or not in your gut, right?
I mean, the rent is very high here.
Oh, my God. But to answer your question, David, like, where do I land now?
Yeah.
So I absolutely 100% shut off anything like this that day when I was 21 or so and didn't really experience a lot since. As I have gone through so much more life now as a... year old person.
Ish. We'll just put ish over it.
Yeah, just bleep that out. Proud to be older. Like, what's the alternative, you know? But
well, and to your credit, like, I mean, we were raised in a way to not entertain these ideas.
Yeah, like it's sacrilegious, essentially.
Yeah, I understand why you'd be like, kind of gated. Yes. And then as we've gotten older and kind of get more open to it, like, I totally see why you'd be like, oh, now I understand those experiences when I was younger. Like, how do I come back to them?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack, I'm sure.
Yeah, and just then, like, as a child, they witness a lot, right? But without the wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So kids don't even know that stuff's weird. And that's where I was with these dreams where I just had them. And I'm like, well, that was nuts. But like, let's go eat some honey smacks.
Yeah. So you shut the dreams off.
Not only the dreams, just like anything ghost related.
Shut everything off like 21.
Yeah.
And then I imagine, I don't want to speak for you. You went on some degree of a spiritual journey of like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Have you opened that floodgate a little bit? How does this work? I need to know how this works.
So
now,
I think now where I land is I make myself available and I don't resist anything that comes to me energetically or just really in life in general. I'm here to experience things as I'm led to experience them. I'm willing to let life unfold, however that might be. I definitely have dreams that I would say are from somewhere that are not my own conjuring. I've asked for guidance and wisdom and things, and I think dreams are a conduit for that. I do experience what I interpret as signs. You have the first thing that you notice, the second thing that confirms that, yeah, you saw something, and then the third thing is the sign to tell you, like, yeah. So they kind of work in threes. So I hardly ever dream, but then I'll have these where it's like three similar dreams in a row, and I really take note of those.
Is the visual component still there, or is it just sensing an energy?
The visual is gone. The energy is for sure there, and I'm almost more tuned into that than the vision. Like, you don't need to see it to know that it's there.
Okay.
The best way I could describe how it feels is, have you ever walked past somebody and you just know that person is going to do something crazy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatever. Like, your antenna picks up, you just get that sensation, you know. Be on guard. I'm doing karate hands for anybody that can't see.
Ow!
So I think what might be the difference between someone who's wired like me and wired like someone else is some people might say, oh, that's weird. I got a chill, or I feel, Sarah feels, Evan feels cranky or angry. And sometimes if you dig in a little bit more, you're like, do I feel angry? Or do I feel territorial of this kitchen? And I think it's a muscle that you can like work out and get better at, is distinguishing what you're feeling versus what something that might be just passing through you or is in the space or around this object or whatever it might be. You have to have a quiet mind and soul to be able to interpret the difference. That is something that I think has changed as I've gotten older, is my inner quiet allows me to interpret versus experience.
What makes a quiet mind and quiet soul? Just being receptive?
I think you have to do a lot of shedding of... This is going to sound so woo-woo. Please forgive me. All the things that get trapped in you energetically, your childhood trauma, your any trauma,
mm-hmm.
your genetic makeup that makes you impatient, or all these things that are just stuck in you. We spend our whole lives, hopefully, trying to shed these things. And I think the more you shed, like think of a clouded windshield, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every single swipe of the windshield wiper, you can see more clearly. And I think if you've done work to clear your windshield, you can see more. Not just spiritually, but, you know, receiving wisdom and all of that. I think that's like, again, why we go to meditation, to let these thoughts pass through until we're aware but not attached, and we can receive wisdom or clarity about ourselves or whatever we're seeking.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what woo-woo means, but like that sounds, like, I was like, that sounds poetic. No, but I love that idea.
Do you think that this is a skill that anybody could learn, or is there some innate ability that someone needs to have and cultivate that?
I think that anybody can do the work to clear themselves, to be receptive to the energies around them. I do think some people are naturally predisposed to being able to do these things. There seems to be a pattern with middle children.
Oh, God.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And I think, you know, if you want to go sciencey, I do think it may be something with these calcite crystals in our minds or whatever it might be. I think some people are predisposed to it.
Why middle children?
It's a pattern from, you know, as you start to meet people. Okay. Yeah, I just have noticed that middle children seem to have something where they can tune in. But I don't know. I think anybody can, because whatever we're here for, it's got to be to learn and to grow and to experience. And I think this is part of it that we have shut off over time. You know, back in the day, like these pineal glands, they give us our circadian rhythm, our rhythm with nature. It's the same thing that tells birds to migrate or to breed or whatever. And as technology has grown and as we've gotten disconnected from nature, we've really shut off our need for that pineal gland. And like, we don't migrate. We just, you know, sit in our houses very comfortable. And there are things that we can listen to and tune into, but we're out of practice. So we might be genetically not as predisposed to be able to engage with energetic fields or whatever. But I think everybody has what it takes to tune things out and to really listen and to, you know, look at nature, to dream, to, you know, be representative of all the ancestors that have led to this incarnation of us, to have that wisdom that has been passed through that we've just been too distracted to notice. I think we can all clear our minds.
David wants to believe it's tattooed on his body. Like, what's the first step for somebody who wants to open themselves up to this kind of thing, if they want to? Or is that how it works?
How do I speed run having an experience?
That's the problem, is you can't speed run it. I think you need to ask.
How or what? Or
I would be clear what you want and why you want it, and I would ask for it. And I would ask for it in a space where you're clear and calm and cogent. I would practice meditating until you feel like you can get to a place where you're still. And you ask for it. I felt very lost these last couple of years with the state of everything. Mm-hmm. I hadn't had my dreams in a long, long time. And I just asked, like, I feel lost. I think a lot of us that relearn our spirituality after being born and raised and taught something, that we don't have a relationship with something anymore. And it's hard to ask.
Yeah.
So all I can say is that every time I've asked, I've received. And I understand that comes from a place of privilege, that everyone asks for lots of things. But, you know, I asked for a teacher, and 36 hours later, someone lands in my life who has been with me ever since, guiding me. And I asked for dreams. I have them now. I think the hard part is that we just don't ask. What my biggest advice would be is to not distract yourself from that which your soul is seeking. So if you're feeling like your instincts and your inner self is saying, like, I want to be calm, I wish I could be this or that, really listen to that inner voice and then set yourself up for success, like whatever that might be. It's really easy to fill our days with stuff and to not spend the time being quiet.
Yeah, I love that.
I feel like we have a good idea of like your abilities. I don't even know if that's the right word. And so I'm curious, a couple like specific events that happened. And so we've referenced this like 15 times already. Tell me the metronome incident of what year? 96, did you say?
99. The metronome incident of 1999. Know the year? I had to do the math, but yeah.
How old were we then?
Okay.
So I was a freshman in high school.
And I would have been
a dweeb.
A dweeb.
And Evan, you were present for this, right?
For the end.
Part of it.
Okay. Yeah. So run me through just the facts of what happened.
The facts are, oh gosh, they sound so insane, but this was peak Sarah being older and having these experiences, and it's starting to freak me out instead of it being fun or cute. So,
okay.
You say older, I mean, still
like 16, 17, 14, yeah, yeah. 15. Yeah. 99, so. 40. Yeah. So my friend and I, she would also see the person walking out of the corner of their vision. And I just want to say, too, now that person has passed away, I wonder if the person walking by my vision was actually my friend who passed away, if it was always her.
Like a forward.
Yeah, because, you know, outside, like, time is a human construct. And the second that person passed away, I was like, it was always her. Yeah. She just was like a lovely person who was a neighbor and a bestie. But so we were paid for some reason to house sit this poor, poor guinea pig, which I was ill-equipped to keep alive. I felt so bad, but the thing just missed their family so much, it just, you know, ate all the plastic and killed itself. Yeah. And like, started making that phone call.
Wait, what in the world? How did we get
so
to
I was
this?
I had a great pet sitting business where like 50% of the time the pets deceased.
The parents.
That's why all these people are haunting.
Wait,
like,
wait. How did we transition to pet sitting from a metronome incident?
This is where it all begins,
yeah,
David.
This is
you
the
asked
start,
for the
David.
Facts.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So
Sarah killed a guinea pig.
The guinea pig was alive at this time.
Okay.
We were it was probably a quarter mile from our house, and we were leaving to go to pet sit, which just involves giving him some carrot sticks, making sure the
this wasn't
changed.
One of my guinea pigs, was it?
Did your guinea pigs live a long, healthy life?
Yeah.
Well, there's a controversy over how one of them died, I'll
say
that much.
Oh, no, it wasn't me. No, this was for our lovely family down the street of Fondale.
Okay.
So we went to their house. We were walking down, and one thing we know, you know, like this Chesterfield summer is like cicadas and crickets, and it was just like that raw southern, like, wow, wow, wow. You know the noise.
Yeah.
Like, the bug noise is crazy
in
the country, in the south, and the summer.
It is, yeah.
So we're walking there, and we were just talking about, like, I can hardly hear her because everything is so loud.
Yeah.
We go, and we, like, we throw a tennis ball to the dog a couple times, feed the guinea pig, and it was interesting because as we leave, we walk out, we shut the door, and everything is dead quiet.
It is, like, overwhelmingly loud when it's one of their brooding years. It's, like, a crazy noise.
Put your ear up to a semi-truck's exhaust pipe, and you got it.
What are you doing to my truck?
Mind your business.
So I just want to set the context. Like, if this is a cicada season and it suddenly goes quiet, that is going to be, like, stunning.
Yeah. We walked out, and it was... It almost took your breath away how quiet and silent it was. And instantly we felt something was different.
Okay.
And that's always how I think, like, we ask about how can we all learn to be more open is to notice it and don't push it away.
Did you guys communicate?
Yes. Because on the way in, we're like, oh my gosh, it's so loud. And the second we shut the door, it was nothing. I'm like, do you hear that? And she's like, yeah. You know, we're just like, it makes you want to whisper. And so we were walking down the street.
Going back to your house.
Going back to our house, yeah. So, like, you know, a quarter mile, not too bad. And it's probably 8 o'clock.
Okay.
And it was definitely all the way dark. And we were there maybe 30 minutes. When we walked in, there was not a car on the street. When we walked out, there was car after car after car after car after car after car down the entire street. I know that sounds crazy. Cars the entire way.
Which is odd for the neighborhood we grew up in.
It was not a place where we'd have a giant festivity.
Yeah, there weren't a lot of people driving through.
No, no. And especially where it was, there wasn't, you know, that dense of housing in one of the cars. This is so crazy. And I don't know cars that well, but it was like really old. I'm not going to say Model T Ford.
I was like, Model T?
I know. It's the only one that I know. But it was the oldest car I've ever seen. And I'm just going to say what it is because David said to stick to the facts. There was a dead person sitting in the seat with his eyes open.
Okay, so was the car driving or stopped?
No, it was like all these cars were parked.
How did you know he was dead?
Because of how he looked. So we were walking as close as I am to you, which is awkwardly close because we have to share a mic.
Yep.
We walked past this guy's car and he's just sitting there completely motionless, eyes open, straight ahead. And he never moved a muscle. And we passed by and we're just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
And all the other cars that are parked are empty.
Everyone's empty except for that one.
Are they also old timey?
No. Well, they're like kind of all over the place. Like, you know, it's Chesterfield, so
any car could do.
But this one was particularly weird, had this guy in it, and it freaked us out. He's like green gray. He was not glowing, but he was different.
Okay.
So the second we get to a tasteful distance past that car, we sprint as fast as we possibly can. And then we slow down because it was like a little bit of a distance and we feel like we're like safe distance away. In the spotlight that this one creepy little streetlight, there is a face made out of a hand streak in the light that's about like 6 feet wide where it's just like line and then like a mad face.
Yeah.
It could have been a coincidence, right? Like maybe someone saw that spotlight and they're like, oh, let me just draw something in there. But this is what it looks like.
The way you just said the story, the image I got was it was like floating in the air. Do you mean this was drawn on the ground?
It was drawn on the ground directly in the light. And it was like the second we stopped running, we looked down and there's this like freaking crazy face. It was in red. That's the whole thing where you notice something in conjunction with someone else where like, why did we stop right there? Maybe it's just because we stopped right. We got to the light. We felt better. As we're running, Kim says she can see a light following through the forest, like keeping up with us.
Could you see it?
So I looked back and I did see a light, but I honestly was really scared. Like, I just wanted to get home.
Well, the initial thing, yeah.
Freaked out. Like, I glanced over. I saw what she was talking about, but I just tore into the house. We shut the door and we sit there for a second. We're just like, oh my gosh, like, that was the craziest thing that ever happened.
So the tension's building.
Yeah. Tension's building.
The cicadas have stopped. You see this presumably dead body. There's a light maybe in the woods. There's a red face painted on the ground.
You got it.
I'm imagining at this point, y'all are hitting a fever pitch of like, let's get home.
We're terrified. We come into the house. We're freaking out. We come in, we sit down at the bar. And we're like, were we talking to you or were we just talking to each other?
So we have an open floor plan way ahead of its time in the 90s.
Totally.
But it's like the kitchen and then the living room and then like a bar area, but you can like see through. So you could host from the kitchen and serve to the living room, if that makes sense. In the living room, there is a piano in the corner, sliding glass doors, and then the TV and all that stuff. So it's like basically like a den that you can look into the kitchen or vice versa. So I'm sitting there playing video game.
God, nerd
stuff. SOCOM.
SOCOM.
Marvel Madness.
David, don't call me out like that.
So anyway. Marvel. So
Sarah and her friend just bust in the door and I'm like, so?
So there's two bar stools at the counter. The piano is about 9 feet away.
Not even that.
You don't think so?
From the bar?
No, probably like 6 feet.
Yeah. David, you've been there.
Feet. Yeah.
So like one single man could lay down and touch our bar to our piano?
As long as he's not in a relationship. Come on. There we go. All right, there we go.
I don't know. I haven't been in that house in 40 years, but I feel like I'm 6 feet tall. If I was to like reach my toes out on the ground and reach my arms above me,
you could touch
like
our piano.
Really stretch. I feel like
you could tickle some ivory.
I could get from the bar to the piano.
So then we're talking 9 feet. Because if you have your arms over your head, that's true. Just demonstrating. Yeah, okay. I'm just saying. So Kim and I are in our bar stool seats and we're just going back and forth like, wasn't it the craziest thing? Like, and that face, was that already there? Or like, what was up with that guy? It got so quiet. And we're just debriefing. So we're at a fever pitch. Just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And we both stop talking and turn and look at the metronome.
On the top of the piano.
Yes, the metronome on the piano.
It's like a, what do you call the piano with the
top? It's an upright. Upright piano.
So it's an upright piano. So the metronome just sits on the top of the piano.
Okay.
It's like eye level if you're standing up.
Yeah, so the metronome is a thing that keeps time when you play piano. And it is a wind up. And like, so if you want to hide the metronome and it can just look like a triangle, I guess, for whatever reason you want that.
It had a cover on it.
That, like a wood pyramid.
It's a wood pyramid. And then when you took the pin out, pulled up on the thing with the two nails that kind of went in, then you would push the metronome thing down to the left and up to get to release it from its catch. So it's a very intricate metronome.
Everybody's like, what? Scientifically?
It's sort of like...
Perfectly. I can't believe that's how it was received.
So maybe this will help a little bit. It's sort of kind of like a safety pin where like you have to push it down and then over and then like into its holding area and then do the reverse to get it out to use it.
Yeah.
So at this point, when y'all turn around, the metronome is in like the stored position.
It's in the stored position.
You would have to take the wooden cover off and then do the like reverse safety pin, move the timer out.
Yeah. It would take me a solid 20 seconds, 25 seconds to get it going so that I could play piano. I think what's important is that Kim and I both stop talking. We look at the metronome. The metronome lid flies off and lands at our feet, 9 feet away, at least. David stretches his arms out, 9 feet.
9 feet.
And then the thing pops out, stays there for a second, and then we scream, we run upstairs, I grab Evan.
So all of a sudden being like dragged up by my neck, like, we're going upstairs. Like, I mean, I guess that makes sense. I was trying to play games, but. So
do you remember why you both looked at the metronome? That's such a weird, like...
I know, it's so weird.
Yeah, I'm curious, why did you suddenly pay attention to the metronome? Because it was a completely inconsequential thing in the room at that time.
So, David, if it wasn't for that, I would have assumed it was because we came in so fast from being scared that we, like, changed the pressure in the room or something. Like, that's how my skeptic brain would have interpreted it. If it wasn't for the fact that we stopped talking... looked at the metronome.
Yeah.
What drew us to that is the best way I can describe, if you can relieve yourself of the fact that what we see is all that's there. If you can remove that lens from your thinking, it's because we sensed a presence there. Because the story is so fantastical, I'm like, I don't even believe it sometimes. But the fact that we stopped and looked and then it exploded is the most crazy thing.
To like explain what would have had to happen.
Yeah.
For this to just be a coincidence, right? Mm-hmm. If someone would have had to like wind up the metronome and then store the arm just barely and then put the cover over top of that, not secured. So that if a, like a loud bang happened, the cover might fall off and then the thing would pop out and start going.
Yeah.
But like short of somebody like setting it up with that intention. Like, that would not happen.
So I can tell my version of events, and this could be kids that you make it worse as you remember because you're just scared a kid. But we were in the room and it sounded like the metronome noise was coming up towards the door. And then we heard it walk back downstairs, and then mom came home.
I was like 7 or
yeah.
something.
Yeah, I mean, that's so the way I remember it.
We were 11.
Yeah, so I won't discount it, but also, like, all I remember is the moment where we ran upstairs. I remember the metronome lid popping off and just starting to tick, tock, and then going upstairs in a hurry. And, like, that's where my memory stops.
I love that Evan is just like
minding his business,
hanging out, sitting at the bar stool, drinking his Mountain Dew, and then like y'all bust in. Y'all saw a body in the car?
That don't sound right at all. Because that is how I used to talk when I was 8.
So that was the great metronome incident of 1999.
That's a great story. So the last story that I'd like to hear is you sort of flipped the script on me.
Yes, I did.
And sent a no context photo to the group chat. And so it was just by itself with zero context, really creepy.
With context, it's creepy.
Yes, let me give you this context. Yeah, all the ways it's not great.
And do we have permission to add that picture to the Instagram story?
Yes, I send it specifically for that because okay. I feel as though this is a good example of when energy is trapped in an object instead of a room or a house or just passing through.
Okay.
Because I feel like this is an example of just undeniable energy. And this one did not feel good.
Okay, so where and when are we?
So my oldest daughter, she's now 9, but she was probably 14 or 15 months.
Okay, so this is a while ago.
Yeah, she could walk, but she was definitely toddling. As a parent, you know, she wasn't like a kid that could play in the way that I'm about to describe. Oh, Lord.
Okay.
So we're driving down the road and we see a dollhouse that's for free.
Well, there's red flag number one.
Yes. But it was the nicest dollhouse and we have this baby girl and we're like, oh my gosh. And it was one of the ones where like everything was real. It was just microscopic size.
Sarah, have you seen no movies? Like, this is how a horror movie starts.
But some of these houses in this area are like so big. You're like, oh my gosh, it's like rich people trash.
How did we get this such a nice thing for free?
We'll take it.
Right. So it's a exact house with replicas of all these, like, the drawer vanity works, and there's, like, mini hairbrushes, and everything was just so.
Okay.
And we took it down to our basement, and right then and there, looking at it, I was like, this thing doesn't feel, like, good. But I'm just, something's wrong. And
something's
I just was going to be like, okay, like, I'll
what,
get over
so
it.
So what was it?
It's energy a sense of dread.
Or, like, just, oh, sense of dread, yeah.
Yeah, sense of dread. Dread. So that's what I would encourage you all to practice is, like, when you get sudden feelings, name them and see if they're yours or not.
A dread I'm very familiar with.
But is it yours? That's the practice. Well, sure. We all both dread everything. But anyway.
So you got a creepy dollhouse and put it in the basement.
Right. And so we're getting it all kind of set up. Everything was in boxes and wrapped up in tissue paper. It was very ornate. And I was thinking, like, is this an appropriate, like, dollhouse for a little kid?
I'm just picturing a horror film. Is your basement finished or unfinished?
I think at this phase, it's finished. With, like, the original shag carpet, wet bar in the middle, very, like, 60s, 70s kind of style.
So kind of creepy.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Swingers would have no problem hanging out down there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very poor lighting. And so I was unwrapping all the stuff, and I had just gotten the dollhouse kind of staged, and I had the mom and the dad and the baby and all these, like, figures kind of throughout the house.
Uh-huh.
So we bring our daughter down to see it. And I go to unwrap one more box. I had turned around for maybe 5 or 6 seconds. My daughter was looking at the house. I can't express to you how short of a time it was. Like, I literally went to open up another box to unwrap it. And I looked back. All of the figurines were assembled in a semicircle. And the baby, oh, chill bumps. Like, they're all on the ground in a semicircle. And they're all looking at a baby who seems to have fallen and is all alone. Yeah. And they're pointing at this baby.
If she took 3 hours to set it up, it would still be that creepy.
Yes.
Okay, so where were the figurines initially before you turned around? Were they just scattered all over?
I think I had the baby in the crib, the mom in the nursery. Like, they're in the house, staged how I thought a family would be.
Okay. If I'm recalling the picture correctly, they're all outside of the house on the floor.
Yes. It's a 5-person family that are in the semicircle at least. There's a grandma and a grandpa,
okay,
a mom and a dad. Oh, a brother and a sister. And then the little baby. It was just like that scene from, was it Exorcist or the one that begins with the P?
Poltergeist?
Poltergeist, yeah. Where she leaves for 1 second and she comes back and all the cabinet doors are open.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like that where, like, I turned away and I looked back and all the figurines were out in a semicircle. And the baby was just laying alone on the ground. your listeners can see it on Instagram, that it's the freakiest. Okay,
so you said you had a sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
When you set your daughter down and turned around to do something else, did you like have any sort of feeling? Like, did the dread come back more intense, or did you turn around as a complete shock?
This was before I had really spent a lot of time thinking about the events of my life and all these things to make sense of it. I kind of had this thing where it's like, oh, this gives me like a heaviness in my chest. And it wouldn't be something that I could have maybe articulated back then as well. But I was concerned like about her playing with it. Like, this thing just seems weird.
And those are all feelings before this happened.
Yeah. Okay. And so then I set her down and I look away and I look back just to see how she was engaging with it. And she was just, she was almost standing exactly where I put her. Like, she's not even in the picture because she is not right near where those pieces were.
Did she have any interesting interaction before?
She was just kind of looking at it. Like, you know where you're first born, you try and, like, make them more advanced. Like, she was in no way ready for a dollhouse.
But she didn't have any, like, weird, like, apprehension to the dollhouse, is it?
No, she just stood there.
A 14-month-old, if you set them down at a dollhouse, they're going to grab something and put it in their mouth, and that's about it.
And I think that's what I was, like, thinking at. Like, did they, was she going to be able to play with it or swallow stuff? Because like I said, like the drawers were little, there was little itsy bitsy things, but everything was crafted.
So how long after you turned around did you take that picture?
So I took the picture immediately.
Okay.
And then I got rid of the thing.
Well, I need more details about how you got rid of it. Where did you take it? What did you do?
I gave it away to someone. How mean?
Why did you continue the cycle?
That's the sequel.
I'm going to text her. Yeah, she probably...
Oh, you know the person you gave it to.
I know the person. Yeah, I'll follow up.
Did you tell them what happened?
I absolutely did not. How terrible.
Oh, my God.
I know. Well, I just needed the thing out of my house so bad. And I felt like it was me. At that point, I'm like, I knew enough weird stuff had happened. I thought it was a me thing versus the house thing. But man, that house...
Did you pack it up immediately?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Whoever made that dollhouse. Like... The level of detail that someone needs to like carve out these things just so. I just feel like somebody.
It wasn't like a manufactured Hasbro toy.
It was like, it was an actual house with shingles. And I can't express to you the detail. And I think this is a thing people have, like a collector's items where they're truly real things. They're just small. But I think something happened to that person and just like your trauma transfers. I think it's like, you know how people don't mean to really hurt each other most of the time?
Mm-hmm.
Think about how when you cook a meal with love versus you cook a meal while you're pissed, like it'll taste different. This person's probably... And maybe this isn't the story, maybe it is, but like the person who's crafting it is carrying a trauma that all the energy that goes into the house of the childhood they wish they had, or that they wish they had someone to play with, or maybe they witnessed something terrible. Who knows? Yeah. But that was some crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah. And the picture.
The picture's nuts.
Not today.
And David, I remember, as a dad, no 14-month-old could assemble that scene.
No.
Yeah. That's why I had to take a picture. Like I freaked out enough, but I was like, no one's going to believe me. So I swipe the picture.
After hearing that story, I like don't even want to look at the picture again.
It's terrifying. And the way the baby's just far away and alone. Like,
that's really creepy.
Yeah, you can really sense something awful happened.
So do you feel like you were able to take something from it?
No.
Or just you didn't want to?
Yeah, no interest in that one.
Nope. Bye-bye.
I just wanted the thing out of my house. Nope.
Is it a genetic thing? Do you think your kids will have the gift or whatever you call it, the talent that you have? Can you see it in them, or is that not how it works?
My daughter has mentioned hearing voices, and my son has had visions for sure. I think the difference will be that when I sit down at their bedside, I'll be like, go tell me more. And was there any message, or what do you think that they were saying? Or, you know, I don't want to scare them or anything, but like my son totally envisioned someone walking into his room and it scared him a lot. And so with my experience, I think I won't totally shut off people's brain to it. Be like, oh, that didn't really happen. Because we're told time and time again, like you're just imagining things.
I'm glad that's how you approach it, because I think for our upbringing, it would have been shut off quickly. Being open to it wasn't an option.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I like that you give that to them.
Well, I think that it's interesting because going through some of these experiences have actually made me believe more in an afterlife. Like one of the experiences I had with a psychic person who luckily has become a part of my network to connect on things like this. Like I experienced a loss, and this was kind of like the start of my reconsideration of spirituality. And I heard that there was a really talented medium. So I went to go see her. And right before my trip, my uncle had passed away. And I was like, man, should I go? Should I not? I should really go to his funeral. And I just felt so conflicted. But the loss I'd experienced prior to him was so profound, and I was really craving guidance and wisdom at this phase of my life. And so I just went ahead and went. And so when I go there, I'm late and I'm rushing in. And she's like, you know, before we get started, I just want to say there's someone in the room here. And he's like a handsome guy. He's dressed really well. He seems like a city guy. He's just telling me he really wants to be here for you, but he's just passed away and he doesn't kind of know how to be in multiple places at once. And he really wants to sit next to his mom right now. So he wanted to stop by to say, like, we're good, but he does need to go and he's not going to be able to be here for the rest of this experience. And she's like, before he's going, he's saying something about really deep blue water. Like, does that mean anything to you? And she said he had passed away from a heart attack. And I was like, well, my uncle had just passed away, but I didn't know if it was a heart attack or not. And it ended up being a heart attack. And I was like, is it the lake, like the lake house? And she's like, no, it's like really deep blue water. The beach? She's like, no, there's something about he's really happy with this deep, deep blue water. And she's like, but he has to go now. He doesn't like the outfit that he's wearing. And he feels like a little bit embarrassed because everyone's looking at him. And then I realized that was the same time as his funeral because I had missed his funeral to go to see this person. Mm-hmm. And I called my cousin afterward to say, yeah, Uncle Mike, like he came to talk to me, but he said he had to go because he had to sit next to grandma. And she's like, it's so crazy you say that because I was really irritated because at Mike's funeral, no one was sitting next to grandma. This is our uncle. So like mm-hmm. his mom. And so yeah. he was like, I'm sorry I can't be here, but I really need to go sit next to her. And so it was interesting, like, because no one else was, he felt like maybe he had
step
to.
In and, yeah.
Yeah. My cousin knew him very well. And I asked, like, what could it have been with the water? Like, is it the lake house? She's like, it's Lake Michigan. Like, he always said how beautiful the water was in Chicago and how he'd always, like, run over the bridge and he could see the blue water. She's like, it was definitely that. So, like, just the experience and the way she described him and how they kind of, like, take on some of the characteristics of the person that they're talking to you about. It's like, man, there's definitely something past us, right? And in that way, it made me so much more spiritual and so much more open to everything because no one could have known, A, that he passed. I was not, you know, on social media. B, like, they don't have time to do that kind of research. You know, I had prayed for a teacher before going on this trip. She said, someone in your life is going to be really meaningful to you. The number 70 keeps coming up. And I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know who you're talking about. And like, within, you know, a few hours, I met someone who was 70. He had mentioned his age. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But I never said anything. And then, mm-hmm. you know, now we're still great friends. And he became my wonderful teacher. He's been guiding me through a lot of this. So just there was just so much there that I'm like, wow, there's really stuff outside of our reality that I've been really shut down to. And so that was kind of like the start of the reopening. But in a way, it's made me more spiritual because, you know, like religious is like about the routines around spirituality and all that. But like, I've definitely now felt that magic that I felt, you know, when you unlearn the religion you're raised with and kind of define your own. Yeah. This was definitely that spark back into it.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Sorry, my stories are...
No, we're like, well, I don't think we can even top that.
It's hard to trust things again because when you're told what to believe, you lose your inner voice and your inner wisdom and you don't strengthen that voice because that's being done for you. It's like mm-hmm. someone's telling you what to believe, so you don't have to discover it. And then once that falls away, you lose trust with that which you can't see. And it's just like any relationship, you know, you have a breakup, you got to kind of relearn it. But I love the phrase, there's many paths up the mountain, but the view's the same. And I think, you know, we're connected to this bigger thing, whatever you want to call it. And that being, that thing is going to speak to people in all different ways. And I think it's about doing enough self-exploration that you see that way that does speak to you and honoring that. And yeah, being open, just saying yes. Yeah.
Yeah. David,
yeah,
you good? We're doing a lot of family processing over here.
Yeah, so. You know. You know, I just want to, again, reiterate my gratitude to you for coming on and discussing all of this. This is exactly what I want for this podcast, is for people to feel comfortable to come on and tell their stories and ask all of my nerdy paranormal questions to them and everything. And so I really appreciate you coming on. I do have random questions. I've just been jotting down throughout this whole episode. And so just like, okay, hold on a minute. For everybody, I just stopped like mid-sentence because I saw behind you the door open and I was like holy shit, it's happening. But it was just Evan's cat busting the door down.
They're their own form of poltergeist. Yeah.
And so to kind of close things out, just rapid fire, like yes or no questions for you. I've got four of them. All right.
Yes.
And so the first question that I thought of is, I guess, have you and would you use a Ouija board?
I have used a Ouija board And I don't think that they're real.
Okay. So skeptic on some things.
Could it work or...
It's interesting because I truly do believe that whatever we're connected to can speak to us through different means. And I would rule nothing out. Mm-hmm. Things like tarot cards kind of seem similar to that. But I think if you're a bunch of 13-year-old girls, you're going to push that triangle thing around and make it say what you want.
Robert Pattinson.
Robert does like me.
Next is, would you be willing to come to my house and tell me if the ghost of Bret Michaels is here? I don't even know if he's dead.
Yes. He's not dead, but...
Bret Michaels, isn't he the
guy from...
Arrows has a thorn.
There's your musical challenge.
Okay. David, do we get in on this? On this harmony?
I don't even know that song, and you don't want me singing.
Why do you think Bret Michaels is in your house?
He just likes to watch.
I was more just thinking, like, I haven't experienced anything at the house that I'm at. But if you showed up, would you be like, actually, like, there's these things going on? And for some reason, Bret Michaels was the first example that popped in my head. I don't really know why that happened.
I would be more than happy to. I don't seem to be talented in that way where I can, like, walk into a space and really feel it. But I haven't actively tried. So we can experiment with it.
Okay. And then in the same vein, next question is, I've been talking to Evan sort of like early planning, scheming to go on a road trip to some haunted places. Would you go to Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum with us and ghost hunt for the night?
Oh my gosh. What if it's real scary?
No. I mean, picture the tightest gated fence and then one eye peeks through. That's how Sarah watches scary films.
I'll have to think about that because I feel like I have a high chance of receiving something and being maybe traumatized by it.
Okay, fair enough.
I've walked into places that a lot has happened and been like, oh, there it is, you know? So
Okay.
That'd be really terrifying, but YOLO, you know.
And then final question, will you commit to coming back on the podcast for a follow-up episode?
Oh, I would love to. That's really kind. It's been a great experience, and I thank you both for the safe space. Like I said, these are vulnerable things to share, and I hope I can inspire folks to come on and share their stories and make it a little more normal. A little less para, a little more normal. That's my motto.
We have the easy part, and I saw you had like a whole spreadsheet that I think we maybe crossed the first quarter of.
Well, I know. We got into some of it, but I think we got the key.
The metronome incident. We covered, so yeah. That's at least part of it.
We'll wrap out season two here in a minute, but I do want to give you a chance to plug your book.
Oh, yeah. No, I forgot. Thank you for that. So I wrote a kid's book called Beware of the Jorn Snout, and he's a cryptid in himself, and he's roaming around the forest, and he's misunderstood. So it's for kids like 3 to 8, and I was raised on Shel Silverstein, which is like kind of irreverent poetry, and all the books I was reading with my kids was just very lesson-oriented, which I totally appreciate, but I just wanted something a little more like Calvin and Hobbes, Shel Silverstein. Overseen mischievous vibe. So just won a Moonbeam Award, which I'm really excited about. David, yours fantastic. Is in the mail.
I'm looking forward to it.
So check it out with your kiddos. And I would love to give some to your listening base. Sure. Like if you guys want to do a little contest to give away a book and a stuffy, I'd be more than happy to give that. But he's a cute little guy named Arnie. And thanks for the opportunity to plug.
Where do people go to get more info, order a book?
Yeah, bewareofthejornsnout.com. Jorn Snout, J-O-R-N Snout. Yeah. My son came up with them. They came up with all the ideas. I just put words to kids' ideas, which is why I think kids like it, because it's redonkulous, the things they come up with. So we have a poem dedicated to just bad words. So parents love that one.
That's my favorite.
Well, if you're listening and you're interested and you'd like a copy of the book or a stuffy, just comment on the Instagram post for this that you're interested in, and then at some point in the future we'll pick somebody and maybe they can get a book.
Yeah, sounds good.
They gonna get it.
They gonna get
they
it.
They gonna get that maybe book.
It's not in my basement.
They gonna get that book. No. They gonna get that book.
He made me.
If we practiced.
Okay. Evan, you got any final thoughts on the season two closeout?
Do you have any final thoughts on the episode?
Evan's answer is nah.
No. Do you have anything you want to?
Nah.
No.
Yeah.
The truth is not out there. The truth is right here in front of you.
But this whole episode, I'm just like, I think I should believe more.
Yeah.
There we go. We're moving in the right direction. So season three, or season two. We're finishing that up now. We'll probably take 3-4 weeks, see what we want to do with season 3, and then we will be back with season 3 at some point in the future. So I just want to say thank you to everybody that has given us a listen, given us a chance, who has spent some time with us listening to me and Evan just rant about things. I really appreciate it. And if you enjoy what you hear, just tell one other person about this podcast, ask them to give it a chance, and I appreciate that. So with that...
And can I make a request where we all just bark like a bone dog?
Yeah, absolutely.
What does that mean?
Where you go, break.
Oh my God.
The bone dog is back. That's Evan's alternative personality.
I think the best way to end season 2, as I slap my hands together, is with a bone dog bark. A BDB. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
On the count of 3, we're going to do a BDB. 1, 2, 3.
Whoa.
Roho.
Close enough.
I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. All original music created by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tannis. Follow her at Tannis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.